Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And hopefully the chainsaws outside don't come through on the microphone. We had some tree work going today. And unfortunately, they really know what they're doing. And they're climbing trees with a chainsaw. And their chainsaws are working. So it's, these guys are good.
And, well, good. I'm glad you're doing some firefighting prevention. And
yep.
We're limiting the trees. I assume it's not cosmetic.
No, hell no, no. It's limiting them up so there's no ladder fuel, so they can't get if there's a ground fire, it can't get into the crown.
Yes.
And so that's the idea. So we got 20 feet of clearance from ground to the first branches, where the tips of the branches are. Some of them lean down a long way.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other stuff. So we're trying to do a little preventative maintenance here. Just keep things clean and fresh and do all that kind of good stuff. So hopefully that all works. Hey, but I did get I got a question for you. I have a big note on it saying next time we talk to Kirk, we got to bring up it's Sampath or Sampath. S-A-M-P-A-T-H sent us in a question. And he said, I want to clarify a point with you about HALT, which we primarily deploy in the prototype testing phase. Good.
As you
go through the references on the web, most of them refer to as highly accelerated life testing.
Yes.
I think that's accurate. However, in the prototype phase, we tend to increase the stress beyond operating limits to understand the degradation or destruct limits. Okay.
Right.
We do not intend to find out the life or test it as it's a lifetime requirement. Is that right? And then he goes on. So I feel the abbreviation for HALT is more of a misnomer. Rather, it should be highly accelerated limit testing. I think he heard one of your previous podcasts.
Well, I hope so, because I totally agree with him. Yes. Greg, and I told Greg Hobbs, the one who coined the term, that it was not an accurate. He also, several other people in the field told him that. And I always told him that when a reliability engineer hears of a life test, they expect to come out with a number.
Percentage survives for particular duration, whatever.
Right. Yeah. And the most common question I got in all this, you know, and I went to HALT to HAS, and they said, how much time is that? Is the chamber time equivalent to field time?
Right.
Or what's your, and I said, you can't do that. It's not possible. Because
it's not the intention.
It's not the intention, right? And it should be called a highly accelerated limit test. And you refer to that. And nowadays, when I write anything, I talk about, you know, the former name being life testing, but that was a misnomer. And we've talked about that for several decades. Well, since I started with Greg, it was definitely 2006 or earlier.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a long time. I wanted Greg to change it to discovery test. We're trying to discover the weaknesses in this product.
Exactly. One of the things I also say is compare those limits. Those are the things that you have. You always come out with something in HALT, and that is a limit, an operational limit, possibly a destruct limit, not always. And I don't really believe in going well beyond operational limits because, you know, you don't know what's going on. And usually
it's harder and harder to interpret when you get
it's
way
harder
out
and harder.
There.
Right. You're going to be at the point of if you're melting solder joints or reflowing solder, you're not.
Well, then we know that we're at the what did Greg call
or
it?
Melting plastics or any other.
No.
Kind.
But Greg had a name for that limit. We're at the technological limit.
Okay, it's the fundamental limit of technology.
Right. Solder melts at this point and. Our operation is not anywhere near that temperature. Normal use or even extreme use is nowhere near that temperature. And
we could
improve the product by using a high temperature solder, but there's no value in doing that.
No,
we have
I mean,
much margin.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're in the oil well instrumentation downhole, well, you have to use 300C solder because you're actually operating at around 175 to 180, you know, 90
sometimes
degrees,
hotter,
sometimes hotter. So, the point is that you'd always, somebody's, you know, I've heard, oh, we did halt, we didn't find anything.
Right.
And it's not possible because you either found a limit, and if you had three or four samples, you'd kind of compare those limits and see if the limits are grouped together at, you know, the same point, the same temperatures, high and low, where it quits operating. And that's usually, with most digital systems, that's what you're going to find. And I don't see any reason to go beyond those.
Yeah.
And those can be pretty significant.
But go back to Sampath's
okay.
question. Is like, you know, is it a misnomer? And I think the short answer is, yeah, it confuses people. And I think the name of a technique or a method or a process should not confuse people as a minimum.
Well, let me ask you this, Fred. Do you know any one test or a series of tests that gives you a number of what the product will last in the field?
Yes.
What test is that?
Accelerated life testing. It's kind of without the H. And there's a lot of caveats on there. It depends on how complex the
I'd
product
say a lot
is.
A lot of caveats.
But let's say one I did, and I know I've talked about it many times, was on when ball grid arrays were a brand new style of electronic attachment to a board.
Yes.
The chip would be on this little daughter card, and then it would route to all these little solder bumps, balls underneath it,
underneath
and then you would attach them straight
up.
But that was new to this product, and the product we're making was going to do a million a month kind of thing. So it was, we need to make sure that this works in our application. So they said, Fred, you know statistics, go figure it out. And so the product in that case was the solder joint. Will this solder joint survive as long as we need it to survive with some level of probability?
With the caveat that it's made correctly, it's reflowed correctly.
Oh, no, no, no. I went into underfill. I went into all the variability. I designed that test to all that into account. I went after it all kinds of ways. And now it was a pretty nicely done accelerated life test. And we know that the primary failure of that solder was thermal cycling, and you had to do it properly. Otherwise it wouldn't accumulate damage. If you just went up and down real fast, like we do in halt, the solder doesn't have time to relax, to create the damage.
Well, that's not what you're supposed to do in halt. You do let
You should have dwell
you
times.
Do
let,
well, you do have dwell times for the, and.
All right. But you're not going to interpret that to a life test, because I was doing 2,000 cycles, accelerated cycles, in order to get to the duration of what we expected this thing
okay,
after
where did
survive.
You get where did you get your field?
We had tons of information because they've been instrumenting laptop or inkjet printers.
Yeah.
And for thousands of them all over the world, and we had the environmental conditions they were on, the use profiles of them, that we had five different avatars for types of representing various distinct types of numbers. We had temperature, we had humidity, we had frequency of use, we had all color, all you know, black and white only, and how often they printed. We could go after it. We had so much data.
And did they put in temperature sensors in the printer to measure that?
Yeah. And the nozzle
for that reason?
Yes.
For life?
No, it was, there's two things that happened. One was the marketing department said, we need this information, and the engineers agreed. So they gave all censored up, monitored and censored up 1,000 printers, and they selected who got it. So they got a representation across all these different use conditions and people way they use them and stuff like that. And that data was collected that was like Uber data. It was not in every printer. And then the nozzles themselves, there's a little chip on the side of it. It's part to control how the nozzles actually work. But it also logs nozzle number 17 fired today, you know, this many times. It's a little counter of how many times it shot. It doesn't interpret what the image is or what you're putting or anything like that.
You did some finite element acceleration of a specific mechanism, which was a BGA ball grid array solder joint underneath.
And if I had unlimited time and unlimited information, I could have done that for every failure mechanism. But I didn't. The one that was the pivotal decision was, will this joint, this product, last the required amount of time with a low enough probability that we're going to switch to it?
And you did this, what, thousands of times on these, many more than
I had probably hundreds and hundreds of samples. I dreamed about looking at x-rays of ball grid arrays because it's just black dots everywhere.
And you had failures.
I did. Eventually, it was 6 months after the test had gone well beyond what we expected it to do. So I needed failures to make sure the test was working. So eventually we got failures, diagnosed it. Yep, it was solder joint cracking.
It was 30 years life in those BGAs.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it was amazing how strong it was.
Yeah,
But it was, you can do it. You can do it.
But that doesn't tell you how much life is really in it, because something else will probably fail. The mechanics will probably fail long before that.
You got to define the product. And now that we already had all the information about the mechanics and the paper rollers and a bunch of other stuff. We had tons of information because 9/10 of a printer is brought over from other products, right? There was a few new things in this one. And that's when we would dive deep and understand if it worked or not. Now, HALT would not have told us, HALT would not have told us that this ball grid array was good or not.
Well, I'm not sure that I'd say your test did either, because it didn't take into the factors of printers being moved, shipping.
I did multiple times.
And the distribution of that.
It was a very conservative test. We took into account, well, how many times is it going to be dropped or moved or picked up or moved? And
those are assumptions.
We preconditioned all these things.
Okay.
Right. And then I still did tests. And I had a set that was, you know, not abused like that prior. And I had another set that, you know, I had so much money to get samples, and I had techs working with me to get them all set up and wired. And tell you what, though, the hardest part was not getting it all set up. It was just getting the wiring, all of the sensoring and all the power to all these systems to get it up and running, and getting test boards. First test board they sent back to me were gold plated. I'm like, we don't use gold. Get these out of here. But anyway, the idea is that HALT, even given the misnomer of the name, is still a very, very useful tool. And if you get over the name of it, I mean, I think at HB we called it STRIFE. It was a system that was very similar.
Stress plus life. Yes, STRIFE.
And then we had, and then somebody else called it MOST, and somebody else called it that. It doesn't really matter. If you have a product and you want to understand where the weaknesses are, where the limits are, HALT, in whatever you want to call it, works. It is a great way to go after uncovering what you don't know. And the hard part is that usually
you don't know about latent defects and future and weaknesses in the design, because you designed it to not have faults and not to have errors.
But a good team understands that they do. And that's where HALT is really a tool for them to say, all right, we know there might be something wrong. Let's go find it. Then off to the HALT guys, you know, HALT team, and say, all right, here's the stresses, here's the things we're concerned about, here's the areas we don't know anything about, let's try it. And it could be power, it could be temperature, it could be vibration, it could be, you know, sand.
And management says, where is it ever going to see that kind of stress in the end-use environment? And
well, that's a whole nother podcast. I'm just saying
the arguments go on and on. But
you've been in a team that gets it, right? They don't worry about what it's called. You've been in a place where they really understood it. There was no pushback.
They did get it. In general, I think Dell got it. And I think a lot of the suppliers I went and talked to in China got it.
Yes. But then there's no pushback. You learn something, you do something about it.
Well, you had to do it. And then you find something that was had been a problem in the field, or you'd seen in the field, and you found it in the discovery.
Well, that's when you're bringing a team on board. But I'm saying after all of that, they get it. there's no dilemma over the name of it. We know that it's finding limits.
I know,
it's
but you're faults. Always going to, right. Some of them get it, but there's always the dynamics of the company changing all the time and management, showing management. And it's not that widespread as far as the understanding, the general understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Well, you
talked about all these
it.
Other things, moist, you know, multiple environmental overstress tests and other things people have called it, you know, and it doesn't, the fundamentals is that, okay, this is my, you know,
your
tenet.
30-second.
30-second is the more margin you have, the more potential reliability you have, the stronger the product is beyond its use, expected use environment, the more it's going to, the higher probability it's going to be a more reliable product. And that you can build reliability in at not that, you can build margin in. In fact, many products that you never intended to have much margin do have lots of margin. Mm-hmm. And you can see that. You can only see that if you go to the limits. Most, very many companies that I've been involved in won't go to limits. They'll say, that's good enough. ADC is good enough. It's never going to see that. Or they'll,
that's not the point, though. I think that's when you get, you know, like, wait a second.
Well, I'm saying, yeah, let's see if this one's ADC or, you know, it goes to 90 and the other one go to 120. That makes a difference. There's something there you see. Yep. You see a distribution of wide, you know, standard deviation that would indicate that you're going to have long tails possibly in the distribution when it gets into, you know, high volume manufacturing. And that's what I'm trying to say is if people don't use that, you know, we got it up to the fundamental limit of technology, but then they, you know, or they say our two samples went to, you know, 135C, which was what I could find on a motherboard if I suppressed the CPU. Mm-hmm. Thermal shutdown, right. You know, that I could get those, and that was kind of the general level. And if I expected, but if I got a board, then it ran at 65 and, you know, had a problem, I'd have something to investigate. If I had four of them that run to 130, 135, it's not always the exactly number. There is a distribution, even in good product, that I would have something to investigate. And there's the gold in that whole thing. But if you don't go to the limits and find out, you know, that it stops operating, you get a blue screen of death at these temperatures, and then it comes back and you usually recover it. So many times you can go to limits and not destroy the unit, just get a operating signal integrity issue or timing, you know, some kind of other issue. And that's where the meat is. That's where it is. Okay. And if you just look at it, this requires a total change in frame of reference for what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve, not to simulate the end use environment, but to stimulate the product to show it its strength, its strength.
And so you're directly answering this question, though, is it's not intended to find out life or the lifetime compared to lifetime requirement. It is about as far away from that as you can get. Now, they're related.
Yeah, that question.
They're related only in that if you do halt, find things that are variable or that can be designed out or improved, make your product more robust. That inherently makes your product more durable. It makes it more resilient to the stresses that have happened in the real world and the manufacturing variability, so that in the real world, it behaves longer and well. It has less probability of failing. Now, we're not going to get what that change in probability is directly from a halt test. It's going to give you and the engineering teams fodder to make improvements.
No. But I also think that if you track and do halt and then start to compare field reliability with margins that you find, and at least we saw Cisco, you could actually see a line or a
relationship.
A fitting relationship between margin and cost or warranty cost.
I got a great example of that. I probably have told you this before. They were making these handheld barcode readers for the folks on the tarmac when they're checking a bag
right,
onto a plane.
And you talked about them dropping them and stuff like that.
But they did their first test. It was at 3 feet, 10 times randomly.
Right.
And they, oh, we passed that test. Nothing failed. And they got it out to the very first tarmac, and it failed within 2 minutes. You know, these guys, the folks doing that job, now you got something in their hand that's in the way.
So right.
It was dropped all the time. And so they ended up, long story short, is they said, all right, well, 3 feet's not enough and 10 drops is not enough. So let's go to where we replicate what we're seeing. And they were up like at 10 feet and 20 drops. And then eventually they were up, they had to cut a hole in the floor, the ceiling of this room they're in. And so they could drop it like 80 feet or 50 feet or something like that.
Right,
and they
right.
had a correlation between every time they increased the requirement for that, what it had to pass for number of drops and height, the warranty went down. And it was a diminishing return. Eventually, it was flattening out. It was other things were failing first.
Right.
And so they, but cracked screens, cracked chassis, you know, the battery falling out, the thing just not right. operating at all those things went away from drop damage. Because instead of using a standard, and I think HALT is the antithesis of, drop it 10 times randomly onto a cardboard, you know, or a cardboard, and then you'll see if it fails. That doesn't mean it's good. Doesn't hardly mean anything whatsoever.
No, keep dropping it until it fails.
Yeah.
And then you got something.
Then you got something you can work with.
You got an endpoint. You got an endpoint.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't get in a lot of tests.
And a lot of standard tests.
A lot of standard tests is, oh, does it pass? That's, you know, all pass and fail.
Well, that was my first complaint with Greg. It was, why do you call it a test? Most people think of tests like from grade school. You just pass, fail. You know, do I? What's my grade? And then life in it said, well, is it going to last 5 years? Well, I don't know. You know, or is it going to last 10 years? Well, I don't know. Well, don't call it those things. And I think Sampath's comment is that, yeah, it is a bit misleading. So that's. Well, is what it is. It got popularized with that name. Greg did a good job getting the word out. It's the concept, like you were talking about, Kirk, is that the basic principle and concepts, it doesn't matter what you call it.
No. It's just taking the frame of reference from looking at, instead of the in-use environment, the potential strength of electronic components and systems. And when it comes to printed circuit boards, flat, and small or big, you know, they're really, really strong. I mean, it took a lot to break one in the chambers at Dell.
Mm-hmm.
It was generally very difficult to do, and you didn't have time. And besides that, you know, we, except for the laptops, usually the environment wasn't really very harsh for a desktop, large chassis system. But, regardless, it's the fact that it's a test of exploration, of comparison. And I don't get the comparison a lot. I mean, that's one thing I'm seeing missing, that we got it. We didn't find any weaknesses or whatever. And I said, well, did you compare the limits of between the units? Do you know what kind of distribution you had in that in that limit? Because that can show you a lot. That can tell you that you got.
They got to read your book again. That's what they got to do.
But yeah, you got a component, you might have a mixed build, you know, and one component manufacturer has a very low margin. You might discover that and decide to, you know, avoid that particular component vendor or that manufacturer of that subsystem. Now, just to go back quickly, I wanted to say that your test with the BGAs isn't the same, and it's not translatable to the life of that whole product. The rollers,
gears.
That's what I mean.
I was never saying it was.
Okay.
I was working on, Kirk,
okay,
was
right.
the ball grid arrays. Balls.
Right.
That's
right.
The product. That's
very
it.
Specific. Very specific. Targeted. Right. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. But that doesn't, one ball grid array, you know, depending on where that particular component is, its position, how many you're going to use, all that. But that's just one tiny, small part of a electronic circuit board or assembly or motor or printer or larger system. And that's what I'm saying. When people want a life test on a system or a large level. I don't see how they're going, because there's so many potential failure mechanisms and variations.
Subject for another whole podcast.
Okay. I'm just saying that when they talk about life testing.
I agree. Okay. There's trade-offs. Okay. There's trade-offs. And take the whole system, find out what you need to know.
Okay.
Right. I think we answered the question, kind of beat that into the ground. I got another question that came up from Anton on another version of HALT type question. I mean, it's a longer one, but I think it's an interesting question. So stay tuned for our next episode of debating HALT, HALT and how useful it can be.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's always good to talk to you, and we'll do it again soon.
Yeah. And if you've got a question about HALT or any other topic, you know, and except for apparently anything to do with statistics, Kirk doesn't like talking about that stuff, but we've got other people we can talk to. But the idea is let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So one, we try to get an answer back to you or some ideas or tips or references or whatever. And then we go talk about it. And almost every single time, I come back and go, I need to update my response. So, Kirk, I'm going to have to get back to the empath and say, hey, we talked about it, and here's some more stuff to listen to. It'll be in such episode.
Right. And we definitely agree that it should be called limit test, and life test was a misnomer. Yes.
Yeah. Short answer. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.